Are there any questions about yesterday? Yesterday's lecture, I should say. Very good. So today, I'm going to go over something that you have already probably seen. But I think some of the things I'll say you haven't seen. And in any case, it won't hurt to see them again, which is the simplest example, in my opinion, of a duality between a gauge theory and a string theory. And this goes under the name of ADS-CFT because the string theory will live in an exactly anti-de Sitter space, and the gauge theory is exactly conformal. Okay? And the first thing I'm going to do is to tell you to motivate or derive, in a physicist's kind of way, this equivalence, which I think is something you haven't seen. Have you? Has somebody argued where the duality between type 2b and ADS and n equals 4 comes from? No? OK, very good. So the way to do that is to start by considering the ground state of type 2b string theory in the presence of nc T3 brains. OK, so this is type 2b. This is the context for today. Does anybody here not know what a D brain is? You all know what it is? Very good. So I see I should mention what they are. OK, D brains, or a DP brain, is a p-dimensional object. So a string would be, in this language, a D1 brain. A particle would be a D0 brain. So p denotes the dimension, the space dimension, OK, DP. So of course, so this is p-dimensional. When you add time, this object swipes out in space-time a p-plus-1 dimensional world volume. This includes time. Okay. Now, these objects are non-perturbative objects in string theory that are very special. They are not just any non-perturbative object. All you need to know for the purpose of my lectures is that they are extended and a few more things that I will describe along the way. Okay. And also, you need to know that open strings, in the presence of D brains, you can have open strings whose endpoints must be attached on the world volume. OK? Is this something that sounds familiar to all of you, or am I, or is this completely new? Yes or no will do, or maybe. You've seen it before? OK. If there are any questions about what I say, OK, specific details, don't hesitate and ask me. OK? So consider type 2B string theory in the ground state of a sector where you have nc D3 brains. Okay, this doesn't have zero energy because these objects carry a mass. But let's look at the ground state in that sector. So I drew it like this over here. And this picture might suggest to you that the space-time around these objects is flat, as I drew it. But that's, of course, not true because these objects carry mass and charge. So they gravitate and they curve space-time around them. So let me draw another picture. Of the space-time around these objects. Asymptotically far away, this is Minkowski in 10 dimensions. Because if you go sufficiently far away, the curvature goes weak, and the space-time becomes asymptotically flat, just like the space-time around any mass. But near the objects, it turns out that the geometry is ADS5 cross S5. Okay? It becomes curved, and it develops, just a second, it develops a throat. And the geometry is this one. And I will ask you in one of the exercises, this is really simple to see from the asymptotically flat solution, see that when you go near the object, this is the geometry you get for D3 brains, okay? For P equals 3. Yes? They are infinitely extended. So what I mean here by asymptotically flat, I mean the transverse dimensions, if that's your question. Very good. Now, what is the size, the typical size of this object? Where's the curvature radius of ADS5 and of the sphere? This is something we can, or if you like, what do you expect it to be, the gravitational radius of this object? Let's see what that is. So that has to be proportional to Newton's constant, so the radius, to some power, which we will fix in a second by dimensional analysis, has to be proportional to Newton's constant times the mass of those objects, which is the number of objects that you have times the mass of each of the objects. Okay? These objects don't have a half-infinite mass precisely because they are infinitely extended. So what I mean by mass is the tension, the mass per unit volume, per unit free volume. Okay? So what I mean is the tension of the V3. Is this clear to everybody? Okay, so the power that goes here is 4, because the tension of a V3 ring, well, you'll see in a second one. Okay? Let's work out what this is. G Newton, by dimensional analysis, you know in 10 dimensions, G Newton has dimensions of length to the A. Is this clear to everybody? Okay. In 4 dimensions, it has dimensions of length squared. In D dimensions, it's D minus 2. You can just see that from the normalization of the Einstein-Gilbert action. Okay? So this goes like LS to the A, this is the string length. So I'm writing this in terms of the fundamental parameters in the theory. So the dimension comes from the only dimension in string theory, which is the string length, times, and this is crucial, GS squared. This is Newton's constant. Can somebody tell me where this power of GS comes from? Any ideas where to look for it? Okay, what is G Newton? G Newton is the coupling constant in gravity. Okay, so if you scatter 4 gravitons, this diagram scales with the gravitational constant squared because it's a 4-point vertex, which is G Newton. Is this clear? Now, what is this diagram in string theory? In string theory, the diagram you would draw is the scattering amplitude at tree level for 4 closed strings. And this diagram, at low energies, must reduce to this one. At least the scaling in the coupling constant has to be the same. And this diagram scales like GS squared. Okay, I leave it as an exercise to you to convince yourself that this goes like GS squared. Is this clear? Okay, so now we know that this goes like GS squared. Now, NC is just NC, and the tension of the D3s, can somebody tell me how this scales with the string length and the coupling constant? Okay, first of all, what is the dimension of this object? This is energy per unit free volume. What dimension is that?
Length to the fourth.
1 over length to the fourth. Okay? It's energy over length cubed. Energy is 1 over length. So this is 1 over ls to the fourth. And now we need the power of the coupling constant. I just told you that D-rings are non-perturbative. Non-perturbative means that their mass scales as some power of 1 over the coupling. Why? Is this, does somebody know why? Okay, because if you look at the perturbative spectrum of a theory, perturbative means, in energies, perturbative means that you can construct it by perturbing around the free theory. Yes? Like in free field theory, with interactions, you construct perturbatively your states, and their mass is independent of the coupling. Say, g to the 0. Okay? So these objects remain in the limiting when you send g to 0. They have perturbative excitations around the vacuum. But then you can have non-perturbative excitations whose mass goes like 1 over some power of the coupling. This means that when you they are non-perturbative because when you send the coupling to 0, they become infinitely massive and they disappear from the spectrum. Okay, so in the weak coupling limit, these objects are not there. That's why they're non-perturbative. Okay, typically in field theory, the power here is 2. If you look at a tough polyatov monopole or a kink solution or any non-perturbative solution in quantum field theory, you will scale like 1 over the coupling in the theory squared. Yes? This is a general result of field theory. It's the typical scaling. In string theory, we also have objects that go like 1 over GS squared. And those objects are very difficult to study for a reason that you will see immediately. However, for D-brains, this power is 1. It turns out to be 1. And this is the key why D-brains are so important. Okay? Why? Because now you see that this goes like LS to the 4th, that's just the dimensions that you get here. But then the power of GS, if I have a GS squared here, that would cancel. But because I have an extra GS here, this goes like GS and 6. This means that when GS goes to 0 for fixed and C, these objects become very, very thin. The gravitational radius goes to 0. OK? So this radius here, r to the 4, both the radius of ABS and S5 turns out to be 4 pi BS and C at S to the 4. This 4 pi just comes from plugging in all the numerical constants here. So what does this mean? This is the key observation. This means the following thing. If you're in a regime in which GS and C is very small, okay? Much smaller than one, this description is very good. Why? Because it is true that there is a region around the brains that's curved, but that region has a radius in string units that's going to 0. So closed strings propagating in this background will only feel the presence of the D-brains at a hypersurface of 0 thickness. Okay? And unless they get all the way to here, they will not feel that presence, because the space-time, essentially what you get is that the curvature is concentrated on a 0 thickness hypersurface. And this is the reason why in this description you can just replace the D-brains by a boundary condition at a hypersurface for open strings. And this was Polchinski's insight. Is this clear? So when GS and C goes to 0, what I'm saying is I can neglect the curvature around the brains everywhere except at the precise location of the brains. And then what I do is, and this again was Polchinski's insight, it's not obvious, you can replace that effect by a boundary condition for open strings. So this description is good in this limit. In the other limit, when GS and C is much bigger than 1, this region where the curvature is significant around the brains becomes large. So I can never neglect it. However, in that region, this space has a curvature that's weak because the radius of curvature is B. Okay? So a gravitational description in terms of closed strings propagating in a background, in a geometric background, is good. If I try to do this when R is of order LS, I don't have enough with looking at closed strings in a background, because all the high string effects associated to the curvature of the background will be important. I cannot just talk about geometry. I have to do conformality theory on the worksheet in this background. Okay? So in order to have a semi-classical gravitational description, I have to be in this limit, where R is much bigger than the string length. Yes? OK, so what we see is that in these two opposite limits, we get two descriptions that are apparently different. But of course, the underlying physics has to be the same, because we're talking about the same system in different limits. OK? Any questions so far? OK, so everything I've said so far is about the ground state in this sector where you have NCT3 brains. OK? Now let's look at excitations around this ground state. And by taking a limit, an origin limit, we will actually derive ABC. So what are the excitations on this side? Well, I have two types of them. I have, of course, closed strings propagating in this background. And I have open strings. Why? Because I just said I have NCD3 rings. So I'm allowed to have open strings as long as their endpoints are attached on the rings. Okay? And of course, these two sectors of the theory interact with themselves and with each other. Okay, the closed strings interact among themselves and with the open strings and vice versa. Yes? Very good. So now let's take a low energy limit here. Let's look at what the interactions in the system look like when I take the energies, the typical energies, for example, a scattering energy, to be much way below the string length. Okay. So we're going to take a low energy limit. This also goes under the name of decoupling. You'll see why. Okay. What is the dimensionless parameter that controls the strength of the interactions between closed rings with themselves. Okay, but in terms of gravity, of the gravitational coupling constant, so think of the closed rings as gravitons and their excitations. Okay, the coupling constant in gravity is g newton, but g newton, I just told you, is dimension full. It has in 10 dimensions, dimensions of length to the a. So to get a dimensionless parameter, I need to multiply this by e to the a. This is saying that gravity is strongly coupled at high energies and weakly coupled at low energies. Okay? That's why it is non-renormalizable. Because at high energies you have to include more and more operators. So this goes to zero when I take the normal limit. As I said, this is just a statement that gravity or closed rings become infrared free at low energies. Now what happens between for the interactions between open and closed rings? Well, the same thing, because gravity couples universally to all forms of matter. So in particular, closed rings couple to open rings also with these couplings. So closed-closed and closed-open interactions go to zero. And the only interactions that remain finite are these ones, open-open. Why? Because at low energies, you know that the open strings attached to the D3 grains give you, of course, when you quantize them, you get an infinite tower of modes. But at the massless level, what you get is an n equals 4, d equals 4, s, u, and c, super young means. Have you seen this statement before? Yes? No? Yes?
We haven't seen it. D. Oh, d is the dimension of your.
D is p. This is p plus 1. Okay, meaning 3 plus 1. Okay, for if you have dp grains, then at low energies, what you get is a maximally supersymmetric theory, super young Mills theory with a maximum number of supersymmetries, but in p plus 1 dimensions in general. Okay? This is the same statement as the statement that when you take closed string theory, you take a low energy limit, you get supergravity for the massless modes. You get an effective theory for the massless modes. Here you get an effective theory for the massless modes of the open string, which is this one in 4 dimensions. Why does it live in 4 dimensions and not in 10? Because the open strings, remember, are attached to the D3 rings. So the massless modes cannot leave the brains. Okay? Yes?
Sorry, I'm just. Where exactly do the. Are the D3 brains just embedded in like 10D Minkowski space?
Yes, in this description they are. Okay. Precisely because even though they always strictly speaking curve the space time around, in the limit GS and C much smaller than 1, all that curvature is localized, it's a delta function localized if you like. Okay, so what we get at low energies on this side, on this description, is, let's see, let me write it here. We get 3 closed rings in 10 dimensions, plus any plus this theory in 4 dimensions. And they are, and this is important, they are decoupled from each other, as I said, because interactions between these guys and those guys are suppressed. Okay? So let's see what we get over here. Over here, we have again two types of interaction, two types of modes. Now we only have closed rings because I replaced the D brains by a backup. All right? But now I have closed rings that essentially live in the asymptotically flat region and closed rings that live down the throat. Of course, before I send the energy to zero, these and these are coupled to each other. Okay? One of these can fall down, and one of these can climb up and interact with each other. But when you send the energy to zero, what you're doing is sending, and by the way, this is important, energy going to zero means energy as seen by an asymptotic observer, okay? Because here there's a gravitational redshift. So what I mean by the energy going to zero is the energy up here. So if I send the energy to zero, what it means is that I'm looking at closed string modes that have a wavelength that's becoming longer and longer. Okay, lower and lower energies means longer and longer wavelengths. So the wavelength of these modes is becoming much bigger than the size of the throat. And that means that in that limit, these modes do not actually see the throat. They cannot resolve the presence in this black background of a region that's much smaller. So these guys decouple from these ones. And for the same reason, if you look at these ones, when you send the energy to zero, it means that this guy finds it harder and harder to climb up the potential and interact with one of these, because its energy is going to zero. And of course, you need a minimum amount of energy to climb up this gravitational potential. So the interaction between the cross-section, if you like, between these guys and these guys also goes to zero. OK? Now, one, yeah, let me just conclude. So up here, when you send the energy to zero, you get, again, closed string modes. And in fact, you get only the massless ones, because you're sending the energy to zero. So all the tower of string excitations disappears. So here you get, in fact, you get free gravity, but let me just say free closed strings, just like here. In the cosine. However, for these guys, when I send the energy to zero, remember that's the energy seen by this observer. That doesn't mean that I can truncate the theory down here to the massless models of these closed strings. Why? Because if I have a mode that's sufficiently down the throat, okay, no matter how high the energy of this mode is, if it's sufficiently down, that energy, as seen by an observer at infinity, is sufficiently low. Why? Because to translate this energy from here to here, what I can do is take this very high energy mode and make it climb up this potential, and when it gets up here, it has a very low energy. But if you like, if I take a string here with a very, very low energy, if I let it fall down this throat, by the time it gets down here, sufficiently down, it will have an arbitrarily high energy. Okay? So down here, I cannot throw away all the tower of string modes. I'm left with the whole closed string theory living in the throat. Okay? So what I get, the other sector that I get, is closed strings, the whole tower of strings, in ADS 5 versus 5. Okay? And I'll take the question and just finish. Now you see, if these two descriptions have to be equivalent, and they should be, because this is the same system built in different approximations, then you see this sector is the same as this one. And because they are not interacting with each other, okay, this one should be the same as this one. This is the way you argue that any pulse force of a in four dimensions is equivalent to type 2B string theory in this background. Is this clear? So if you haven't seen this argument before, I think it's good that you see it, because it's very physical. OK, questions?
Sorry, I'm sure you explained it before, but how does the 10D Minkowski space go to the ADS 5 cross 5? What's causing that throat to form?
Well, imagine that you have some mass, a black hole or something, localized in a region in space time. What does the geometry look like around it pictorially? Okay, there is a region where you have a non-zero curvature, which I draw by curving the line. But then asymptotically, you get flat space. So this is the same thing. Okay, it's the fact that you started with an object that has a mass and a charge down here, which curves space-time around it. And you get a solution that's not very complicated. You can write it down, and this is one of the exercises. And in that solution, if you look at the region r going to infinity, it reduces to this. And if you look at the region r going to zero, it reduces to that. So, and the geometry interpolates between the two.
And what happens to the brains in this approximation? Where do they go?
They have been replaced by an effective geometry which models their presence. So since you're asking, let me tell you one way in which you should think about this geometry. Okay? Is this clear? Before I do that, because I want to erase this side, are there any more questions about this? Yes?
Is it clear that the closed strings is also the scale of Say that again. The full string is better than the parameter, but it will also scale.
Yes, yes, this is universal. Yes.
And why do open strings not decouple?
Like, oh, very good, very good. Sorry, this reminds me, there's one thing I forgot to say here. I told you what the theory is, but I didn't tell you what the coupling constant is. So if I don't tell you what the coupling is, you could imagine it goes to zero or something. So the coupling constant here, g and n, is squared actually up to a constant, a numerical factor, is gs. In order to derive this, this is again one of the exercises. Just take my word for it now. It's very easy to see by writing down the effective action for these objects and reading off what the coupling constant is. Okay? But you see that I'm sending the energy to zero. I'm looking at lower and lower excitations. But I'm not doing anything with Gs in principle. Okay? The only thing I'm saying is I have Gs and C very small here and Gs and C very large. But when I take this limit, this, I'm not specifying what GS is. And then once I have argued for this duality, I can then look at what happens when I change G values, as we will do. Okay? Any more questions? Okay, so let me answer your question. So how would you go about physically finding this solution? Or what does this solution really mean? It means the following. This is, of course, not the way that you construct a solution in practice. But conceptually, this is what it is. Suppose that I have some closed spin propagating in the background of NCD3 brains. And let me look at the propagator for this string, okay? Because that's going to tell me the effective geometry that this thing sees. So that propagator, in the free theory, we just describe a closed string that's propagating in flat space, and that's it. However, because I have, of course, I could compute the closed string loop corrections and all of that, but let me, for the moment, not include those ones. Those are included over there. Let me include only the open string corrections. What this means is that now I can have boundaries on the worksheet of this closed string. Those correspond to corrections of this type. Okay, when this thing is propagating, it can interact with the brains. What are the brains? The brains, mathematically speaking, are just adding a new sector to the theory consisting of open strings. And what are open strings? They are boundaries on Riemann surfaces. So this worksheet now receives corrections from the fact that it's interacting with open strings. So if you sum all possible corrections coming from open strings, in other words, if you integrate out the open string sector, does this word mean something to you, integrating out some degrees of freedom? If you integrate out the open strings, you get an effective corrected propagator for the closed string, which is precisely the propagator of a string in this geometry. Yes? This is the way the open strings correct the geometry. Now, in quantum field theory, you can also do this. Because in quantum field theory, suppose you have, these are tadpole diagrams in quantum field theory. The analog of this is, suppose you have a field that has a free propagator, but your theory includes a source for that field. This is what the brains are. They are sources for closed strings. A source means that I have tadpole diagrams that I have to sum over. So when I sum over tadpoles, what I get is an effective corrected propagator for this field in the background generated by my source. And here what I'm doing is constructing that background order by order in perturbation theory. Of course, typically what you do is not to sum over tadpoles. You just find the classical solution in the presence of the source. And that's summing for you all the tadpole diagrams. Okay? Here, the same thing, you do the same thing. You solve the superiority equations
with a source corresponding to mass and charge associated to the brains, and you find this. Okay, so this side of the correspondence is this one having integrated out the open strings. And of course they have to be equivalent, because if you integrate them out exactly, you get the same thing. Okay, I'm really, really behind, but I hope this is clear because it's important. Any more questions? Okay. So let's examine the limits of validity, or the way that the parameters are related to each other on each side of the correspondence. So the first one is, I told you that R, okay, the size of ABS5 process 5, R squared over LS squared, so R in string units, this goes like GS NC square root, okay, from there, which is square root of G squared Young Mills NC, because I told you that GS is G squared, which is the square root of the tooth coupling. So you know that the gravitational description is specified by the radius of the space and the string coupling constant. And what I'm looking at is how are those parameters related to the gauge theory parameters. Okay? So this ratio is the tooth coupling. So what this means is that if I want to, on this side, remember, if we're doing string theory in a vacuum, we have what so-called alpha prime corrections, or string corrections. Okay, alpha prime, remember, is LS squared. And on the string side, you have to include the fact that the string is an extended object, and those corrections, those are worksheet loop corrections, those are controlled by alpha prime. In more precisely, they are controlled by the ratio between the size of the space where the string lives and the size of the string. So to suppress those corrections, you want the space to be much bigger than the string. Okay? And that happens when the tooth coupling is large. Okay? So what I'm saying is that the alpha prime expansion corresponds to the 1 over root lambda expansion. So in what limit can I... So now I've already argued that n equals 4 square units is equivalent to strings down the throat. In what limit can I neglect the stringy nature here and just use supergravity? In the limit in which the space is much bigger than the string length. Okay, so supergravity is good if lambda is going to infinity. Okay, so what you see is that the very strong coupling limit in the gauge theory, for lambda large, you have all the quantum effects, corresponds to a classical limit on the other side. You get supergravity. Or more than classical, I should say, it corresponds to supergravity, I should say supergravity limit, meaning I neglect the tower of modes. Yes.
So yeah, that's the classical limit of this NGB.
Actually, that's not, I misspoke, that's not the classical limit. That's the limit in which you neglect, so the string has a tower of modes, and including some massless modes, which correspond to supergravity. The supergravity is not
like modes.
Yes, and I neglect the stringy nature, meaning that the fact that I have additional massive modes, okay? That's this limit. Now let's look at quantum corrections. So quantum corrections, of course, are controlled by GS, which I just said is G squared Young Mills, which you can write as lambda over NC. Okay? So you see that if we fix lambda, which means that I fix the size of the space where the string is living, so I fix a given ABS size, ABS 5 plus 5 of a given size, once and for all, then changing GS corresponds to changing NC. So you see that roughly, when I fix lambda, GS is 1 over NC. This should not surprise you, because yesterday we saw that in the large N limit, a gauge theory has an expansion in 1 over MC, and I told you that you should identify 1 over MC with GS when you look at the expansion in linear surfaces. Okay? So GS going to 0 corresponds to NC going to infinity. So loop corrections, string loops, are controlled by 1 over MC. So if I take the planar limit, okay, so now the classical limit on the string side, which is GS going to 0, this corresponds to the planar limit in the gauge theory. Planar meaning NC going to thin. Is this clear? Any questions? Yes.
But now GS is a factor of lambda, and what does that change?
Ah, very good. Nothing really. So, and the reason I was okay because I'm running late, I'm skipping details. But let me be more precise about this. So, what really controls quantum corrections on the string side is not strictly speaking GS, but the ratio between the Planck length and the size of the space. That's really what controls quantum corrections. Okay? You have to compare the size of your space to the Planck length, which is the quantity you construct out of Newton's constant. So let's look at what this ratio is. And let's look at L Planck to the fourth over R to the fourth. Okay? So L Planck to the fourth is square root of G Newton. Why? Because L Planck is the quantity with dimensions of length that you can construct out of G Newton. Okay, remember H bar is 1 here, and C is 1. So in 10 dimensions, G has dimensions of length to the A. So if I take the square root, I get L Planck to the fourth. Yes? And now R to the fourth, remember, this goes like GS and C. Okay? But now, I told you that G, remember, goes like GS squared. Yes? So this is square root of GS squared. So this is ls to the fourth. Let me put the dimensions correctly. Okay, and this is ls to the eighth over gs and c ls to the fourth. And this is simply 1 over nc. Okay, so you see, 1 over nc is exactly the ratio of the Planck length to the size of the space. And that's exactly what controls quantum corrections. Very good. Any more questions? So let me make a couple of comments before I move on to the details. The first one is that this equivalence between type 2B strings and ABS 5, because it's 5, and any post-square index is not proven, mathematically speaking. But there is, in my opinion, overwhelming evidence that it's correct. I just gave you a motivation, but you can actually go and test it. And I think the evidence is overwhelming. So I'm going to take it as true for the rest of the lectures. And the second one is that this is a very deep statement, because it means that all the physics associated to gravity, like, for example, formation of black holes, evaporation of black holes, topology change, et cetera, that can happen when you have closed things, or in particular gravity, living in a space, all of that is included in an ordinary conventional quantum field theory in four dimensions. Okay? And the third comment is that this is one of the best examples, if not the best, of holography. Does somebody here not know what the holographic principle is? Okay, the holographic principle says that if you have quantum gravity, there are many formulations of this principle, but let me give you roughly what it says. If you have quantum gravity, any theory of quantum gravity, in particular string theory is one such theory, living in a volume, in a space, then all the physics of that theory is equivalent to, can be formulated as the physics of another theory that lives. So let's call this B. It's at the boundary of B, and it has no gravity. So, okay? Now this is one such example, because I told you that type 2B strings living in ABS are equivalent to a non-gravitational theory, an ordinary quantum field theory. And now we will see that you can think of it as living at the boundary of anti-city space. So in this case, this would be ABS 5, and this is the boundary of ABS 5. So this is one of the best examples we have of our realization, a concrete realization of the holographic principle. Okay? Any more questions? Good. So in order to see if this all makes sense, let's check at least that the symmetries on both sides match. And this is very important, in particular the dilatation. Okay, so what are the symmetries? On the Gauss theory side, the n equals 4 theory, we have, this is a conformal theory in 4 dimensions, so we have the conformal group in 3 plus 1 dimensions, and also this theory, you've heard something about this theory, that is, okay. It also has an internal symmetry, a global symmetry, which is SO6, or R symmetry, you probably heard it as R symmetry, and it also has, it's a supersymmetric, it's a superconformal field theory. So it is invariant under 32 supercharges, independent supersymmetry transformations. If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry, because this is not going to play an important role. Let me just mention it so you can see that the symmetries match. Now, on the other side, what are the symmetries? Well, first of all, the isometries of these two spaces. The isometries of ABS5 are SO2,4, which happens to be isomorphic to this one. And what are the isometries of the S5? SO6. Okay, a two-sphere has an SO3 symmetry, and N-sphere has SON plus 1. So this is SO6, which of course is isomorphic to SO6. And because this is superstring theory in this background, and this background preserves maximum supersymmetry, you know that type 2B superstrings have n equals 2 supersymmetry in 10 dimensions, which means 32 supersymmetries. Okay? So they match. Now, in particular, this conformal group has one transformation that's very, very important, which is called the dilatation transformation. Okay? So let me write down the metric on ABS5. You all know what the metric on a sphere is, so I'm not going to write it down. Let me write down the metric on ABS5. Of course, in a specific set of coordinates that are going to be very different. So it's R squared over capital. This is the radius. It's a constant. This is a coordinate. And then you have dv squared plus dx1 squared, dx2 squared, dx3 squared, plus capital R squared over little r squared, dr squared. This is a so-called metric in Poincaré coordinates. Okay? And now let's look at this metric and let's see physically what this means. You see that if you fix little r, so you have four Cartesian-looking coordinates, which are these ones, with a work factor, and an additional coordinate, which is the radial coordinate. So if you fix r, if you take a slice of this space at constant r, what you get is a copy of Minkowski in four dimensions, with an overall scale, which changes as you move in r. okay? Because it sticks by this pre-factor. So this space looks like this. If you take r equals, this is r. If you take r equals constant, you get a copy of Minkowski in 3 plus 1 dimensions. Now, at r equals 0, you see that this goes to 0. So in particular, GTD goes to 0. And for that reason, in a slight abuse of language, we are going to call this the horizon. Okay, when I introduce finite temperature, this will not be an abuse of language. So, but for the moment, it is. So this is called the horizon. R equals 0 in these coordinates. And when R goes to infinity, you can in fact argue that this space-time has something called a conformal boundary, which is a boundary not in the topological sense, but in the conformal sense of the word. In fact, we don't need to know exactly what that means. Okay, all we need to know is that when R goes to infinity, this is called, and it can be made precise mathematically, it's called the boundary of ADS time. This is R going to infinity. But what we do need to know is the form, how a specific isometry acts on this space, which corresponds to the dilatations on this side. So this group, of course, includes Lorentz transformations, translations, dilatations, and other things. So in particular, let's look at the dilatation operator. This operator sends x mu to lambda x mu, where lambda is just a constant, positive constant, positive non-zero constant. Now this, you see, if you perform that transformation over here, that by itself doesn't leave the symmetry invariant, the metric invariant, because this gets rescaled by lambda squared. But if I, at the same time, I rescale r by sending r to r over lambda, then I get a 1 over lambda squared here, which cancels, and this bit is invariant because I have a dr and an r. Okay? So, of course, I told you that the symmetries match, and this is one particular symmetry. Okay? The dilatation here acts this way. On this side, it acts both by sending, by transforming x and r. And this is a very important observation for the following reason. Because this transformation corresponds to changing the length scale, or the energy scale, if you like, in the gauge theory. Okay, because if I take x and I rescale by a factor of 10, what I'm looking at, what I'm doing is looking at longer distances or lower energies, however you prefer to talk about it. Okay, but what is that doing? What does that correspond to as a geometric transformation on the string side? Well, let's say lambda is positive. Sorry, it's greater than 1. Okay. If lambda is greater than 1, I'm going to longer distances, meaning lower energies. Okay? But then I'm rescaling r by making it smaller, which means I'm moving in this direction. Okay? I'm going to smaller r. So going to smaller r corresponds to going to lower energies or longer length scales in the gauge theory. On the other hand, if lambda is smaller than 1, I'm going to shorter distances, higher energies, and here I'm moving towards the boundary. So this scale transformation in the gauge theory is implemented geometrically on the string side. Is this clear? This is why going to the boundary is called going to the ultraviolet, because in the gauge theory it corresponds to going to higher energies or shorter distances. So this is for and the region near the horizon is called the infrared region. And more than that, you see that R has the interpretation of an energy scale. It's dual to an energy scale in the gauge theory. Okay? Because rescaling R corresponds to rescaling energies and length scales. In particular, note that because here we are talking about an exactly conformal theory, It means this theory is exactly invariant under dilatations. What does that mean? It means that the renormalization group flow in this theory is completely trivial. That's here. Is there somebody who doesn't know what the renormalization group flow is? You know that in quantum field theory, if you want to compare the physics at different scales, there is something called the renormalization group that tells you how the physics changes when you move up and down in energy space. Yes? This is a very important concept. Mathematically, the way to implement this renormalization, this transformation, is related to rescaling energies and length scales. So what we see is that this theory is exactly invariant under rescaling, and therefore the RG flow doesn't change the physics. In other words, if you probe the theory at a given energy and at 10 times that energy, the physics is the same. Okay? That corresponds over here to the fact that this transformation, together with that, is an exact isometry. Okay? If I rescale the metric in this way, I get exactly the same metric everywhere. So moving in the radial direction doesn't change the physics, so to speak, in that sense. Okay? When we construct theories that are not conformal, okay, when we construct the string dual of a theory that's not conformal, but that has scales in it, mass scales, etc., in those theories, this is not an exact symmetry. It's only a symmetry near the ultraviolet if the theory has a UV fixed point. Yes? Okay, so the RG flow you can think of as starting in the ultraviolet and flowing in the space of theories, or in the space of coupling constants, to something else in the ultraviolet. So if the theory has a non-trivial RG flow, then the physics is not the same at all energy scales, it changes. And it's only near the fixed point in the ultraviolet, and maybe if you have fixed point in the infrared, but always in the ultraviolet, that this scaling symmetry is a good symmetry, is an exact symmetry, by definition of a fixed point. Okay? In that case, the dual string description, in the dual string description, this transformation will leave the metric invariant only near this region, when you go towards the boundary, because that region corresponds to the ultraviolet. But the rest of the metric over here will not be left exactly invariant by this rescaling. Okay? In other words, this rescaling will only be an asymptotic symmetry. Is that clear? This is a very important connection, the connection between moving in the radial direction and the fact that that is related to the RG scale. This is a very important connection in ADS-CFT. That's true in all cases. Okay, so I think I'm out of time. Are there any questions? Let me ask you something. Is there something you have already seen? Do you have a feeling that you already know this? Or because I got to page 6, and I was planning to get to page 12 or 15, so. But that's okay. I mean, this is very important, so I don't mind not getting to the very end if these things are clear. Okay, because this is at the core of everything in ADS-CFT. Yeah. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so if at some point I'm saying things that you already know, please do tell me, because I don't know what you have seen in the other courses exactly. Okay? Yes? Okay, so then we continue tomorrow.
But if you have more time, you can ask to switch with the next lecture, but then you can go from...
That's not up to this weekend, you know, jump up to it.
Fortunately not.
Maybe 1 week, 1 day, I think, maybe Friday is good. Maybe it's completely good.